The nations rage. People devise vain things. Heaven laughs and derides them. In this 49th episode of Church and State, Ryan McCall and Christopher Ferrara address the essay, Tomorrow's Vatican, by Deimos II, an anonymous cardinal, who profiles the next pope the church needs, listing as well some problems in the current papacy. How Orwellian doublespeak now permeates the church. And the ongoing developments in several legal cases aimed at landing Donald Trump in jail before the U.S. presidential election, including their predictions for the most probable next steps in those cases.
Welcome to Church and State with Chris Ferrara and Brian McCall. We're here yet again to see the insanity in which our church and state are engulfed in the last several years. So how have you been doing lately, Chris?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well.
Considering that the apocalypse is looming over us.
Who needs penance for Lent when you're living in the apocalypse?
Well, I adopted some additional household chores for my penance, including cleaning out the cat boxes.
Ooh, I make my daughter do that.
You know, already we're laughing. I think one of the commenters commented that you shouldn't be laughing at this stuff. Well, let me give you a quote from the Psalms, Psalm 2 from the Douay-Rheims. Why have the Gentiles raged and the people devised vain things? The kings of the earth stood up and the princes met together against the Lord and against his Christ. Let us break their bonds asunder and let us cast away their yoke from us. He that dwelleth in heaven shall laugh at them. And the Lord shall deride them. We join and we imitate the Godhead in laughing at this insanity. We laugh so that we don't cry, as the old saying goes.
Exactly. Well, if he laughed at them, what is he doing about the resident in chief at the White House right now? It must be a long laugh.
If God thinks it's funny, I think we can agree.
I agree. Well, let's start with the church. And as some of you may remember, there was a memo that was leaked several years ago from a Roman cardinal. He didn't put his name on it. He called himself Deimos. It later came out that that was Cardinal George Pell, God rest his soul, who's since passed away. Well, it seems the spirit of Deimos is dwelling in the Vatican because a Deimos II pseudonym has issued another text that is called The Profile of the Next Pope. And it was published on an Italian website. And whoever this Deimos II is, this cardinal, I couldn't have said it better myself. So here's his description of the Francis Pontificate. An autocratic, vindictive style of government. Carelessness in matters of law and legality. Intolerance of dissent. Most seriously, a pattern of ambiguity in matters of faith and morals. Francis leaves behind a church more divided than in any time in history. And it's amazing. He then goes on to document essentially, I found it interesting, he calls them ambiguities. I'm like, come on, yeah. It's more than ambiguities. But then he goes on to say fundamental truths that need to be emphasized, because obviously Francis doesn't. No one is saved except by and through Christ, as Christ himself made clear. I'm not going to read them all, but a few. There are unchanging objective truths about the world and human nature that can be known through divine revelation and the exercise of reason. Sin is real. Its consequences are deadly. I mean, this sounds like a Catholic prelate.
Well, I like this caption, fundamental truth that needs to be emphasized. summing it up, the Catholic faith.
Right, exactly. Right.
Because the Catholic faith is not part of this pontificate. Francis doesn't do Catholicism. And I wonder if he even believes in a personal God as opposed to some sort of ethereal mist a la Thomas Jefferson. So I take exception with the fourth item of criticism, a pattern of ambiguity. There's nothing ambiguous about what Francis is saying. And many of his propositions, and we've gone over them ad nauseum on this show, are openly and clearly contrary to the faith. There's nothing ambiguous about them. Everyone knows what he means and where he's going.
Right, it's only the ones that want to kind of square the circle that claim sodomite supplicans or fiducia supplicans is ambiguous. It's not ambiguous about what it's trying to do at all.
Yeah, you can bless the union of two homosexuals by blessing the couple, but not the union. Really? We're supposed to buy that? So that's not ambiguous. That's just dishonest.
Yes.
The difference between ambiguity, which makes it impossible to understand what the person is saying, or difficult at best, and dishonest rhetoric. And that is dishonest rhetoric. They're blessing the couple as a couple, knowing that couple is engaged in a sin that cries out to heaven for vengeance, if we're still allowed to say that without being put in prison these days.
Right. Well, I thought number six was kind of interesting. Global travel served a shepherd like John Paul II well because of his unique personal gifts and the nature of the times. But the times and circumstance, they are changing. The church in Italy and throughout Europe, the historic home of the faith, is in crisis. The Vatican itself urgently needs a renewal of its morale, a cleansing of its institutions, procedures, and personnel. Last part's all true, although I would say stop the John Paul II worship. He should have stayed home and governed the church instead of flitting around the world. So
endless trips of John Paul II accomplished nothing for the faith. They resulted in many cases, ridiculous and even blasphemous spectacles. I remember Benedict participating in one of these World Youth Days. It looked like he was being tortured. But he went along with it, because apparently that's the thing to do now since John Paul II. But papal globetrotting accomplishes nothing. The Pope could do much more if he just stayed in the Vatican and let the faith remain unchanged. And if he acted as simply a custodian of the faith, defending it against errors. And that's what the Pope is supposed to be, a guardian of tradition. To allude to the ridiculous title of the encyclical by which Francis destroyed tradition right. in his ridiculous attempt to eliminate the Latin Mass.
No, it's actually what I tell my students sometimes. Read the title that Congress puts on a law, and then you can pretty safely assume the law does the opposite of what the title says.
That's a phenomenon that we have seen in the church for the first time in 2,000 years.
Yes.
Orwellian slogans.
Yes.
That signify exactly the opposite of what is actually going on.
Very
true. Springtime, for example. Winter.
Right.
Right? The new evangelization, meaning no evangelization. The quest for Christian unity. Rather, what's going on is the fixing and promotion of the existing disunity, telling people in sects that are absolutely abominable in their teaching, especially on morals, that they're fine the way they are. Including the Anglicans, who think they can ordain women as bishops and priests. So it's disunity, not unity, and so on and so forth. All of these slogans are just positively Orwellian slogans that hide the exact opposite of the truth.
Exactly.
We've never seen that in the church. The church has always spoken forthrightly and never had to use slogans. There were no slogans before the Second Vatican Council. There were just the catechisms and the dogmas and doctrines of the faith. There were no attempt to brand the church or present programs under fancy titles like the globalization of ecumenism or interreligious dialogue or ecological conversion, on and on and on. A lot of nonsensical buzzwords and phrases that have proliferated since the Second Vatican Council.
Absolutely. Well, I found the seventh point a really interesting point. Many of the electors in the next conclave will not really know each other. And may, therefore, be vulnerable to manipulation. Now, again, we don't know who this cardinal is, but it is possibly or likely a cardinal that was in the last conclave. So he's sort of saying, hey, I see perhaps another opportunity for complete manipulation. Maybe he's now looking back on the 2013 conclave and seeing the manipulation was there. I don't know. That's speculation, but it made me think when I read that last one.
Well, I would say that number seven should be reworded. Many of the electors in the next conclave are as crazy as Francis and therefore will be vulnerable to manipulation. Actually, they won't need to be manipulated. They already have an agenda.
Yeah.
So the only thing we have going for us, which is, of course, the ace in the hole, is the influence of the Holy Ghost. You never know what will come out of a conclave.
Yeah.
There may be a subterranean sentiment here that this pontificate is so disastrous that we need to back away from somebody like Francis. Although in the existing conclave, I don't know of anyone who could come out of it that would be even under the Benedict the 16th, let alone the next Pius the 10th.
Which is what we're sorely in need of. Yeah.
Well, if we come up, if the conclave produces Francis II,
yeah,
as we used to say in the Bronx of Brooklyn, forget about it.
Forget about it. Well, but interesting, you know, and we mentioned this is used to pseudonym. When are these cardinals going to speak out? How much is it going to take to say, okay, all cardinals in Rome next week, we've got to go sit this guy down and read him the riot act publicly? Like, when are they going to stand up and not hide behind other pseudonyms or euphemisms and call a spade a spade?
Well, if what this document states is truly the belief of Demos II, Demos being the people,
right,
why won't he say it under his own name? And the strength in numbers when it comes to the cardinals standing up to the Pope. And it doesn't even have to be a very considerable number. We've discussed this before.
Yeah.
If a half a dozen cardinals called a press conference in Rome and said, this Pope is a font of error, and here are his errors, and we must stand up and demand that the Pope correct these errors, and we must not accept them and must oppose them, that would be the end of the Bergoglian pontificate.
But he might take my apartment away.
Yeah. Was that what's going on here? They're afraid of losing perks? That reminds me, I was involved in a pro-life case involving Paul Hill, who executed the abortionist outside the abortion mill. He was on death row in Florida. And the pro-aborts attorney was trying to take his deposition on death row. And he was refusing to answer questions. And she said, if you keep this up, you'll be held in contempt of court. And I said to myself, what are they going to do, take away his ice cream?
Yeah.
What did these cardinals have to lose? I mean, I don't want to judge them. I'm not saying that their motive is creature comforts. I don't know what the motive is, but it seems to me that objectively speaking, they should be able to put their name to these denunciations.
Well, I was reading earlier about St. Perpetua, whose feast is coming up next week. And when the Romans came, her father said, don't just tell them you're not a Christian. And she stood up, again, young girl, to her father and said, I could no more say that pot over there is not a pot than say I'm not a Christian. That's what I am. And she got dragged off to prison. Again, as bad as Francis is, he's not going to drag them off to prison, at least so far. I mean, and like you said, we're talking about losing creature comforts. You know, our Lord lost everything. You can't lose your apartment. I mean, again, maybe there's another reason, but if that's the reason, there's a reason cardinals wear red. It was supposed to remind them of the blood of the martyrs.
Yeah, and having said that, we shouldn't pose as holier than they.
No.
I mean, there's human weakness. I understand the degree of human weakness, but again, there is strength in numbers. So if each individual is afraid to do it under his own name, why don't you get six of them together?
Yeah.
Then what is Bergoglio going to do? He's not going to defrock six cardinals. That would be an explosive development. It would be the press conference heard around the world. And I really think that we would put a stop to what he's doing. Mm. Although that may end very soon from what we're seeing now. His health is continuing to deteriorate. He was just in the hospital again.
Yeah.
And he only found out after the fact for additional tests. So something's going on there.
Interesting the parallels, because I think it was the exact same day Biden made a surprise trip to the hospital for, quote, routine physical that wasn't on his schedule. It was just odd. It was, I think, the same day. But anyway, speaking of Biden.
Coincidence? I don't think so. Yeah.
Speaking of Biden, let's go look at the world of Donald Trump's legal cases. It's almost like, you know, the kind of classic view of a law firm on Friday. It used to be the old law firms on Friday, the partners would get together, have lunch, go around the table, let's recap where all the cases are. You almost need to do that by the hour if you're Trump's lawyers, to recap all the cases. There's been a lot of activity this week. So the Supreme Court, first of all, has agreed to take his immunity case. So he raised against the political operative Jack Smith's ridiculous case, presidential immunity. It went through the D.C. circuit. Surprise, surprise, they didn't accept it. And he appealed to the Supreme Court, who has effectively issued an order by taking the writ to stop the trial from going forward. So that, and then we had crazy developments down in Georgia. Fulton County Court is a mess. So what do you make of the latest developments this week?
Well, let's talk about immunity. What do we mean when we say presidential immunity? Well, it's part of the common law that public officials, which is a reflection of the immunity of the sovereign back when they were kings, right, are immune from being sued when the exercise of their official functions. And in the context of the United States legal system, that would only be accepted from in the event that the public official violates a clearly established right. If you're talking about, say, a local police officer or some other official subject to a civil rights lawsuit, you have to have presidential immunity from prosecution for official acts, because if you don't, whenever the president takes an official act that some prosecutor in some state deems criminal, as soon as he leaves office, he can be prosecuted. He can be prosecuted by multiple local prosecutors. And what the D.C. Circuit has basically said is there's no presidential immunity from criminal prosecution at all, as John Sauer pointed out. And as Sauer pointed out in his petition, successful petition to the Supreme Court, it was actually an application for a stay that was treated as a petition for certiorari. As he pointed out, if you abolish or declare that there is no presidential immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts, then the presidency as we know it will cease to exist. No president will do anything that might be considered a possible exposure to criminal prosecution. So, for example, drone strikes that have been conducted by presidents, or the war in Iraq based upon the obviously false statement about weapons of mass destruction. Wasn't that a crime? But what Trump is accused of doing that they've turned into a crime is making phone calls and having conferences with people about obvious indications of electoral fraud because of millions and millions of unverified mail-in ballots, as to which former Attorney General Barr said, this is an invitation to fraud and coercion, the use of mail-in ballots. So he made legitimate inquiries. The FBI conducted an investigation on his watch into possible electoral fraud in Georgia and in other places. So they're attempting to criminalize that. And this is an example of why you need presidential immunity. There's the remedy of impeachment. Now, that's not going to extend to a garden variety crime that a president commits for his own personal benefit. Suppose he poisons his wife.
Right.
Or he's driving drunk and he mows down a mother and a two-year-old child. There's no immunity for that because that's not an official act.
But we already have the law for that, you know, within the scope of your office. I mean, there's already law for that. It just seems like the D.C. Circuit's gone crazy and wants to disregard the existing law.
Well, Sauer pointed this out, too. I think it was in his reply to the so-called special counsel's answering brief. He basically said what the special counsel is trying to do is insulate all the other presidents from the things they did that could be characterized as criminal, such as the Iraq War, while creating a special immunity exception just for Trump.
Right.
You would have Trump immunity, which is limited or actually non-existent, and all the other presidents, they have a different immunity. That's exactly what Sauer pointed out. He's saying the special counsel is trying to create a Trump-only version of immunity. And that's what all of these cases are about, charging Trump with things that no one else has ever been charged with before.
Well, like New York with its $400 million, quote, fine for something that happens every day on Wall Street.
Yeah, the non-fraud fraud.
Right. So clearly that's in the sense that it will delay the trial that Jack Smith is doing for, you know, the whole schedule's got to be off now. So the Supreme Court, I think, set oral argument for April 20th. They might not issue a decision till June. That might end the case. You know, it's going to clearly delay it. What about Georgia? What do you think the odds are now that the Georgia case is on the way out?
I'm only speculating, but it seems that Judge McCaffrey, I think it's McAfee is his name, has let in all kinds of evidence that have made it clear that the three people who have testified, Willis, Wade, and Bradley, the friend of Wade, are lying about what happened. Namely, that there was a relationship between Fannie Willis and her lover boy, Wade, long before he was given this contract to be a special prosecutor in a RICO case as to which he had no experience whatsoever. So if she had a relationship with him, a romantic and sexual relation, before she gave him the contract and bestowed $700,000 upon him, that's an egregious breach of ethics and conflict of interest. And if she's lying about the relationship, she has to go. Does the judge think she's lying about it? I don't see how we can reach any other conclusion. She comes into court and waffles about it, but her friend, Yerdy testified that they had a relationship going back to 2019 with hugging and kissing in front of other people. His friend Bradley, the attorney, had all kinds of information that he gave to one of the defense attorneys by way of text messages, saying absolutely they had a relationship before he got the contract in, I think it was November of 2022 or November 2023, I forget which. So when he came to court and was confronted with his text messages, he claimed he didn't remember, or he said he was speculating. He wasn't speculating. And, well, by the way, the rest of the chain of text messages has been admitted into evidence. And in that chain, Bradley is telling the defense attorney that, yes, there's lots of stuff here. Here's where you look to get the goods on their relationship, and go there and go there. And by the way, I can't give you an affidavit because I can't burn that bridge. But happy hunting, he said to her.
Wow.
And then 6 weeks later, he comes to court and doesn't remember any of these text messages. Forget it. They stank up the courtroom. The judge has any integrity, he's going to find that the three of them lied through their teeth to conceal this relationship. It's a cover-up.
Well, and the testimony I watched with Willis was hilarious, because there is this whole issue. She hires him, gets him this fat contract, and then he paid her back with all these lavish gifts and things. So she's on the stand and says, well, no, he didn't pay for that. I paid, you know, he bought the tickets and I reimbursed him.
With
and,
cash.
And yeah, with cash. Well, where'd you get the cash? Well, it's cash. I just keep large stacks of cash at home.
So yeah, you take 50 bucks. You say, well, when you go to the supermarket, you get cash back $50.
Yeah.
I put that in.
Yep.
So she came up with the $6,000 or $7,000.
But then I love, they go, so how do you get paid at your, you get like direct deposit? Yes. So are there records of withdrawing that cash from your bank account? No. So the cash just appeared out of nowhere. She has maybe like a money tree, you know, that her backyard that just produced it. And again, we're supposed to believe this?
Well, Megyn Kelly, who's become more and more conservative since she was booted out of NBC after leaving Fox News, said it best, I think. She said she has never in her life as an attorney seen a spectacle in which three different witnesses get up on the witness stand in a hearing, and it's obvious that all three of them are lying. It's just obvious.
Yeah. So, again, they've been pushing hard to get this trial going, because they clearly want Trump in jail on November 5th is their goal. But if this prosecutor gets removed, what likely does that do to this trial happening before November?
Well, hard to say. Can he remove Fannie Willis and her lover boy and just have someone else from the same prosecutor's office take over the case? Some people say, no, that's impossible. You'd have to send it to a different county. And if it goes to a different county, Bucks County, for example, you could end up with a Republican prosecutor saying, this case is garbage, which it is.
Right.
A RICO case based on phone calls and text messages and telling people to watch a TV show. I mean, the so-called overt acts and furtherance of the so-called RICO conspiracy are a joke. Not one of them is a criminal act. It's all protected speech. So if another prosecutor gets a hold of this, he may say, I'm not prosecuting this. Because even if I get a jury to convict, it could end up getting reversed by the circuit court. And if not the circuit court, well, actually, the Georgia Supreme Court would reverse because it's a state law prosecution. And if the Supreme Court of Georgia doesn't reverse, it's going to go right to the Supreme Court. Can you prosecute a former president under RICO for making phone calls and telling the chief of staff to do things?
So why hasn't Trump raised immunity in this case?
I don't know if he has or not. Also, there's the Section 1512 problem, which is that Smith has indicted Trump for obstruction of an official proceeding. But that's a financial crime statute that came out of Enron, where corporate executives are destroying documents in the middle of a financial investigation of a corrupt corporation. It's got nothing to do with what Trump did or with what the J6 protesters did. One of the J6 protesters got a grant of certiorari on the misapplication of Section 1512, a financial crimes obstruction statute, to political protesters. Certainly, if the J6 defendant prevails, which looks likely, why else would the Supremes have taken it, and his conviction is tossed, then half of Trump's indictment goes right down the tubes.
Well.
Talking about the Jack Smith indictment.
Yes. Well, it's certainly going to be, as I think predicted, a wild another 10 months of this year.
We are going to see things that none of us have seen, that the Western world has not seen in the history of political modernity. Absolutely unprecedented stuff is going to happen.
Well, we already have a sitting president impeached twice. One without any process.
Times. Yeah. Indicted four times by Democrat prosecutors using Democrat grand juries.
Yeah. Well, again, two reactions. We got to laugh, as we said in the beginning. If God can laugh at this, so can we. And we have to pray. We really, that's what we can do. So before we go, we want to remind you of the Fatima Center's 100 by 100 challenge to get 100,000 first Saturdays for the 100th anniversary of Our Lady's request to perform the first Saturday devotions. It's pretty straightforward. You can go to their website here, find out about the first Saturday challenge, what the first five Saturdays are, register so that you can let them know you've done it and they can keep a record of this spiritual bouquet. Again, Our Lady is the one that's going to get us out of this. We need her. She is our mediatrix to bring us the grace to get our church and state out of this crazy world that it's in. But she asked us to do some things. She asked us to pray the rosary every day, do penance, and do the five first Saturdays. So, you know, we're not on the Supreme Court. We can't decide Trump's case. We're not a cardinal. We can't call the press conference in Rome, but we can certainly make the five first Saturdays. That's 100% within our control.
And her power is not to be underestimated. She is the mediatrix of all graces. The constant teaching of the church that, by the way, Francis doesn't like very much, as he's made clear.
But he's the Marian Pope. He's great.
Oh, yeah, very Marian. Yeah, right. We can see that in all of his pronouncements.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. That's our view. By the next time we meet, maybe Trump will be indicted three more times, or maybe some of these cases will be down the tubes, as you say. So join us in a couple weeks, and we'll see what's happened.
Things will get more and more exciting as we go along. Take care, Brian.
This episode of Church and State is brought to you by the Fatima Center. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved. For more resources and to support this vital apostolate with your donation, visit our website, fatima.org, or call us at 1-800-263-8160. And please join us in offering Our Lady a spiritual bouquet of 100,000 first Saturdays for the 100th anniversary of Our Lady's request of this devotion. Sign up for this first Saturday challenge, 100 by 100. Update your status and track our progress around the world at fatima.org, 100 by 100. Along with the consecration of Russia, the first Saturday devotion is one of the two principal means by which God wills to establish in the world devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. For peace in the world and in the church, and more importantly, for the conversion and salvation of many souls, it is essential that every Catholic live the Fatima message. Our Lady of the Rosary, pray for us. Long live Christ the King.